Big Ten Plus, the one and only podcast of the expanded Big Ten. Available on Twitter, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever else podcasts are heard. Please give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment on the platform of your choice. And hello, everyone. This is the summer 2024 episode of the Big 10 Plus podcast, the first one we've had since the football season. This is Chase. I'm joined by Nick and Jason. We're going to, even though we're not heading into basketball season, we've just finished off, for the most part, the end of the college basketball season of transfers and player acquisitions. And with that, we are going to do our prognostication, at least our early summer prognostication, for the upcoming Big Ten season, the 2024-2025 season, which includes all the Big Ten schools you guys know and love for many years, plus the four newcomers from the Pacific Coast. So without further ado, I'll introduce Nick and Jason. And Nick, just as we start to look at this, I don't know if you have any global thoughts on the what's looking like to be the new Big Ten conference, but in general, college basketball is in the state of crazy player personnel movement, and it certainly looks like, for those of our listeners that are familiar with the old Pac-12, you're going to recognize quite a few faces in this new Big Ten.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Chase. Yeah, great to be back on. Love the theme song and everything that we had to open the episode. But yeah, I mean, you look at the Big Ten, it's a league with size, league with a lot of skill, doesn't quite have the athleticism of the SEC, but still a good number of high-level athletes. And you mentioned the Pac-12 guys, Miles Rice, Umar Ballo at Indiana come to mind. And Ballo is kind of one of those big bruising interior players and really profiles well in this league. It's a league that I think doesn't quite have that elite high end talent, or a top five team per se. But you get into the 10 to 15, range nationally, all the way down to 40, and you've just got Big Ten team after Big Ten team in that range.
Jason, as we talk about our friend Bart Torvik and his ratings, his prognostications going to next season based upon player movement, he has a system that ranks these. He calls it the T rank. His T rank forecast for the 18 teams of the Big Ten has every single team, including Penn State, in his top 80. That's 18 different teams. That's a pretty, looks like a pretty competitive league the way he views it.
It does, Chase. And it really tracks with what we've been seeing. I think we've been tracking the transfer inflows and outflows of talent. And it certainly seems as though the kind of power two, if you will, that seems to be forming with the SEC and the Big Ten have been really gobbling up the lion's share of the transfers to kind of make the quality of this enhanced and enlarged Big Ten really coming up and up and up. So, I mean, you can even look like other sources, Evan Miyakawa, 11 of the top 66 incoming transfer classes, Big Ten, 10 of the top 82 in overall transfer activity, Big Ten. Our friend SB Unfurled on Twitter has the Big Ten with the second biggest net talent inflow, as I mentioned, right behind the SEC with 10 of the teams, I believe, in the top 85. So there's a lot of talent coming into this league. And the newcomers, by the way, from the Pac-12 are loading up their rosters. I know we're going to get into this a little bit, but I think they know what kind of league they're getting into, and they've gone shopping in the portal to make sure they're ready to go to raise their level of competition as they enter the conference.
So we are going to try to touch upon all 18 teams here for fans of the Big Ten of individual teams. Our apologies if we don't spend enough time on your team. Believe me, as the season goes on and the more podcasts we have, we will get more in depth on each and every team. It's a little tricky because 18 is a pretty daunting number of teams to cover from a preview perspective. Nick and I used to do the Pac-12 conference preview. Again, just 12 teams. And we would have to start losing steam at some point during the preview session. So it was always it took a while to get through, but I want to be able to treat all these teams with respect and certainly the respect that they deserve. And with the kind of insight that fans of the sport will appreciate, particularly since there's no reason for us to say any of the teams. When we would do Pac-12 previews, you could say right from the get-go there were probably two teams in the conference. Typically, in recent years, it'd be like Oregon State and Cal, but there could be others. They just had no chance, realistic chance of like making the NCAA tournament. You could absolutely not say that. I would not bet $1 against any of the teams in the Big Ten not making the tournament. I think they all have a great chance, and that includes even schools like Penn State, where some of the prognostications don't look as great with them. But look, they went 9-11 in the Big Ten last season, and they do have returning talent. So I would absolutely not discount any team for making it. So we want to give every team their due. We'll do our best to do that, but try not to let the podcast drag too much. We're going to start with the 14 returning members of the conference and go alphabetically. That means we're just going to start with Illinois under head coach Brad Underwood. This is a completely rebuilt team. Clearly, to me, the second best team in the conference last year behind Purdue. Arguably, one of the best five players in the country last season in Terrence Shannon, who today was formally acquitted of all charges against him. So congratulations to Terrence Shannon. But really now a completely new team. You're looking now at a roster where they've brought in guys like Kylan Boswell from Arizona, who Pac-12 fans will know, Trey White, who was at USC previously, and then Louisville. He's someone that Pac-12 fans will know. Ty Rogers is probably the top returning player for Illinois. Ben Hungarian, I know I'm going to butcher this, from Evansville. Hungarian, do you know how to pronounce that, Nick or Jason?
Humricious. Yeah, it's a
Hungarian?
tough one.
Yeah, that is a tough one. Amongst others. Now, they've also gone out and they've targeted a couple of foreign players. So they have the brother of the Kentucky big, whose last name is Ivisic. He's going to be in Illinois. And then there's also it's Kasparis Jakuconius, I believe. Okay. I'm really apologize for butchering that as well, who I think there's a lot of hope that he'll be a big-time player in college, big-time overseas player. So completely new roster for Brad Underwood. Jason, I'll throw it to you first. Any thoughts on this Illinois team and what's realistic to expect this season?
Yeah, it's interesting, Chase. This is a team that obviously has an elite head coach, like Brad Underwood, probably in the top tier coaches in this league. But as you said, turning over a lot of the roster and not as much proven talent coming back. I'm interested to see Humricus. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how his game translates over from Evansville. This is a guy who, 6'9", but he shot 42% from three for the season last year. So if you can shoot like that, like you're gonna be a huge asset for a team that's basically starting over here. I think we're familiar with Boswell from his time in Arizona. Another strong piece. For me, this is a team that kind of projects in the middle of the pack. Maybe a little lower than some consensus picks, but we can talk about where we think they'll finish, but I'm intrigued. It's like a lot of new guys, and as USC guys, we know a lot about a new team because we've got a brand new team as well. But this one is interesting because you have the stability with Underwood, but the new roster pieces coming in.
So Nick, Brad Underwood's last five seasons at Illinois, these are just Big Ten conference records. 13 and 7, 16 and 4, 15 and 5, 11 and 9, 14 and 6. Well, you know, above 500, not at 500, above 500 all five seasons. Very impressive. But this is a completely new roster. And, you know, we've seen the ups and downs of guys like Kylan Boswell and Trey White. I would not want them. I would not necessarily want to be on a team where those two guys were like your top, let's say, two players. But maybe that won't be the case if some of these other players really step up.
There's no doubt. I think I'd be fading this team. You know, it's a talented team. Like Boswell's an ex-5-star, Trey White, highly regarded, athletic. I actually think the best long-term pro prospect is Kerry Booth on this team. He transferred from Notre Dame. He had a really good game that I saw last year. They were playing, I think it was Virginia, where he had 17 and 9 and made a couple threes on a Notre Dame team where he didn't really have any surrounding talent there. So he's really long, son of a pro, and can stroke it a little bit. So I'm a big fan of his, but kind of wonder if he's a year or two away from really being that, you know, conference level superstar. Hamrickas, you know, like Jason mentioned, great shooter at his size, doesn't really rebound. So they are going to put a lot on Merez Johnson and some of these other bigs to rebound the ball. But if Kylan Boswell has that breakout that I think people expected after his freshman year at Arizona, and Trey White maybe figures out how to shoot the ball, you're probably talking about an NCAA tournament team here. So I don't want to sell them short, but I do think a couple of things have to go right for them to, you know, be in that NCAA tournament and potentially, you know, upper half of the Big Ten conversation.
Yeah. So if any of you who have listened to the USCHoops.com podcast that we do, we've invited SB Unfurled onto our podcast before and discussed him. Everyone should, I think, I would recommend you follow him on Twitter and check out some of his data. He really does a good job of you know, ranking players through the transfer portal. But he ranks basically all players in the NCAA who play 40% of minutes or more. And on that basis, we did a very kind of like, or I did a very kind of crude projection of how each team would stack up just using his rating system and projected minutes that we crowdsourced. Illinois probably falls right in the middle range, bottom, let's say the bottom of the middle, but definitely in the middle from just a pure ratings perspective. But obviously that doesn't take into consideration factors, all the intangible factors, but amongst many other factors, including cohesion and just obviously coaching as well. So I don't want to disparage, but you know, they're right in the thick of things, I would think. Moving on to Indiana, I'm kind of surprised this is only the third year of Mike Woodson, and it just feels like it's a longer period of time. He's right at about 500 in the Big Ten over three seasons. Made the NCAA tournament his first two seasons, but then missed it this past one. Indiana fans went raised a bunch of money in NIL. They went out and got some players, and those include Miles Rice from Washington State. Omar Ballo from Arizona, and Caden Carlisle from Stanford. So we have three former Pac-12 players that have moved over. Luke Good, who was at Illinois this past season, he moved over. As far as returning players, top player is probably Malik Renaud, but they also returned Mackenzie Ngbato and Trey Galloway. You know, based on track record, you know, Nick, this look, they've got Ballo now on this team. They've got an interesting point guard on Rice. I'm not sure where Carlisle fits in. I have a feeling, knowing Woodson, that this is probably another, let's say, 12-8, 11-9 type team, but I think he'll make the NCAA tournament with it. But maybe they're just, you know, more kind of, I don't know. I feel like they're an NCAA tournament team. Just with Woodson, I'm not sure where the ceiling is. Where do you stand on this, Nick?
I think I'm a little bit higher, but not like dramatically higher on him. You know, they, for all Woodson's faults, right? Like, he was a 4 seed a few years ago on that, with that Trace Jackson Davis team. And yeah, like, Trace was an unbelievable college player and is doing pretty well in the NBA. But That team didn't really have any guards, and I think the guards are better on this one. I like the trend line of Mackenzie Mbako. He shot 32.7% from three overall, but upped it to about 38% in league play. He was kind of figuring it out in the from February 10th on. He scored 12, 20, 22, 7, 14, 24, 15, 13, 11, and 16. So was a much more consistent shooter and scorer in the back half of Big Ten play last year. So like his trend line. Cannon Carlisle seems primed for a jump. You could say, even if you think Woodson's an inferior coach, like he's coming from the Jared Haas system, and transfers out of Stanford have done pretty well historically. So I think he's gonna have a pretty nice year. Miles Rice, I don't know if he can shoot, but he's cat quick and does, a lot of good for you on offense from a passing and getting to the rim standpoint. And haven't even mentioned Malik Renu and Ballo, two guys who have proven production on the inside. So I'm pretty high on the roster. You never really know with the Woodson factor. I'm with you. It feels like he's been there 5 or 6 years at this point, but I think on paper, at least, they're a top half of the Big Ten team with potentially a fairly high ceiling.
Where do you stand on them, Jason?
Maybe even a little higher than that. Maybe not a contender to win the league, but like I could see them in the 4, 5, 6 range for sure. They have out of the 14 incumbent, let's call them Big Ten teams, they've got the fourth most minutes returning from last year from their own team. They also have the most returning production in terms of points. As well as minutes played and returning starts of any of the 14 teams that we're going to talk about before we get to the four newcomers. So from that standpoint, plus just like talent, like Ballo's a really talented guy. There's a reason like Arizona finished, I think, sixth at KenPom last year. He's a 66% shooter from the field on like very high volume. And so that's someone you can really like build around on both ends. Great shot blocker, great rebounder. So I'm pretty high on Indiana.
I think, Ballo is going to be such a key to, in my mind, of where they land as far as what the ceiling is. They just as far as the OVR numbers that we discussed from ESPN Unfurled, they're right at the top for returning production in the Big Ten, number two in that kind of ranking. So there's every chance for this to be a very strong team. So I don't want to give the impression that there's any lack of talent. I do wonder, Tommy Lloyd, I think, is a kind of a offensive genius and knew exactly how to use Ballo perfectly. I don't know if Woodson will be as strong, although Woodson has a great reputation for using bigs. So we'll see how that goes. And if they can use Ballo as effectively as Arizona did, I think, that, they might win the conference. Now over to Iowa, Fran McCaffrey, who, unlike Woodson, seems like he hasn't been there forever at Iowa. Just a very steady program that he runs. Last year they were 10-10, and ended up what they I guess they made it they did played last season in the NIT rather than the NCAA tournament. Very kind of like similar type team to the one that they had, I think, last season, at least on paper. But before last season, McCaffrey had made the NCAA tournament 3 consecutive seasons. And, he had some interesting players that we all kind of know about, like Lu Garza and Keegan Murray. My thinking on this team, just looking at it, it looks like McCaffrey is a good coach. He gets his players to play well. They have Peyton Sanford has returned. He's clearly like their go-to guy. They have Owen Freeman down low. I think this will be a very competitive team, but they'll probably just be, my guess is, like on the bubble for an NCAA tournament, unless we see like some like extraordinary scoring numbers from those guys. So where are you with these guys, Nick?
I agree with you, Chase. I kind of think that their KenPom is going to be higher than their overall record, just because it feels like the kind of team that gets hot at home and blows you out by like 20, or 25, with Sanford and Dix and these guys just on fire from three, but don't really have the athleticism, or the grit and toughness and some of these close slugfest Big Ten games. You gotta love McCaffrey as a coach. I mean, they've had four straight teams in KenPom where they were top 10 in the country in taking care of the ball. So it's something that he clearly preaches, and his players have executed year after year. 2021, they were first. 22, they were third. 23, they were eighth. And then this past year, 24, they were fifth. So an unbelievably efficient offense. Sanford, I think, is going to average close to 20 a game. Josh Dix is an analytic god in terms of true shooting at the two. So a lot of skill, but kind of the same story with Iowa. I don't see them as a top 100 KenPom defense. I agree with you that probably a bubble team here.
Jason, where are you at?
Yeah, I agree. They feel a little top heavy to me. Certainly Sanford, probably one of the top returning guys in the conference, right? You got a guy who's 55, 38, 91 shooting splits, who rebounds and takes care of the ball, like checks a lot of boxes. Owen Freeman, right? Very strong freshman year. Blocked shots, high effective field goal percentage, high true shooting within conference play specifically last year. Really got a lot better as the season went on. But I do think you see a fairly significant drop off. You've got Josh Dix, but then after that, your last couple spots in the starting lineup and your bench maybe not as deep as some of the other teams in the league.
I should note that they brought in as a transfer, Seydou
Traore.
Traore from Manhattan, who at one time was claiming that Eric Musselman was pursuing him at SC. Just a note, interesting tie-in there. Moving on to Maryland, Kevin Willard, the coach now entering his third season. That's bizarre to me. He's entering his third season, and Woodson Center is fourth. I don't know. It just seems like they've been there markedly, more than one season differential. Maryland, Turgeon actually had Maryland in the NCAA tournament 6 out of 7 seasons. They just weren't really, excelling. I think they only made one second weekend. Willard had them as an 8 seed a couple seasons ago. It's just not, things have not come together for Maryland as a program like they were the Maryland from the ACC, heading back, more than a couple decades with Gary Williams now, where they just assemble so much talent. They're just so strong. This Maryland team, I think is going to be very competitive. I don't know if they'll be competing for the top of the conference, although I guess they could. Julian Reese is back, which is one of the, top returners. They also have a really great transfer in Jacoby Gillespie from Belmont. And then they have the freshman who really shined in the McDonald's All-American game, and Derek Queen. So those three are really three intriguing players, and maybe they'll, really produce something very interesting for Maryland this season. I just want to add, throw in that there's another Eric Musselman recruiting tie-in with Selton Miguel from South Florida. So Jason, I'll go to you first. What are your thoughts on this Maryland team?
Did we use the bottom of the middle as a sorting mechanism? I think we can revive that one again, at least for me. Probably a little above Iowa, but kind of right there in the middle. For me, you love, Jacoby Gillespie coming over from Belmont. Shot 66, 39, 83 last year. High assist rate. He had a teammate who was taking a ton of shots, but he was the one actually driving the efficiency for that Belmont team. So that'll be interesting to see how his game translates up a level. And then you've got, Julian Reese, who's a real kind of throwback college basketball player. in more ways than one, I guess, right? Because he's an old school center that's not really stepping out, but maybe more impressively, he's a fourth year player at the same school without having ever transferred. And he's tied, according to Evan Miakawa, for the fifth best defensive box plus minus in the league. Very strong rebounder and shot blocker. So I think this team's going to be better on defense than on offense, and I've got them kind of in the middle of the league.
Where you got with the Knicks?
I think I'm, yeah, middle of the league. I would even say like maybe upper middle. Gillespie, analytic, great analytic player coming over from Belmont. I think that was a pretty expensive NIL acquisition for them. Loved Queen, saw him in person. I thought he was the most college ready freshman in the class that I saw at that McDonald's game. Great footwork, great hands, and really can finish around the rim. So, obviously, like they didn't have the bigs to really throw at him, in that game that I'll see in the Big Ten. Like, there's no Vlad Goldin, 7'1", 240. We'll get to him at Michigan in a few minutes here, but I think Queen's going to be a very productive freshman. Seldon McGill, kind of more of a spot shooter, I think, role on this team than he had at USF. Productive player, Big Ten caliber player. The swing guy for me, it's going to be Deshaun Harris-Smith, who was, a late riser in the recruiting rankings last year, had a really bad freshman year last year from an efficiency standpoint, but does have the body, is pretty athletic. So if he does start to put it together a little bit, not sure he starts, but maybe they play him as a third guard with McGill and Gillespie, or they put him as more of a six man energy second unit scorer type. He's probably the swing guy that can maybe take them from middle of the pack to maybe top four or five if they do have that caliber of a season.
So a team that's definitely going to be a media darling coming in from the clear last place team in the conference last year. Surprise firing of Juwan Howard at the end of the season. I say surprise, not because like he obviously warranted being fired, but there was a lot of talk that he was going to get another season for some reason. I think sanity prevailed. It was, I think, a little surprising that they were able to grab Dusty May, not because like Michigan wouldn't warrant Dusty May, just because there's so much talk of linking Dusty May to other openings, including Ohio State, which had closed by then, and Louisville. Michigan went in there, snagged him, so good for them. Big transfer class for Michigan, and of course they should have a big transfer class because the team finished 3-17 last year in the Big Ten. Vlad Golding from FAU. Danny Wolf from Yale. So they have two legit bigs, like 7-footers, anchoring that team. I don't know if they'll be able to play together. That would be an interesting question. They were not able to get Gianni, what is his last name,
Oh,
from
John L. Davis.
Janelle Davis, who ended up at Arkansas. He was an FAU. He was the best player for FAU. He tried to transfer to Michigan. The second year in a row, couldn't get a top player, and last year was Caleb Love. But they have some other really good transfers: Reuben Jones from North Texas, and then Ronnie Gale from Ohio State, and then a guy who I really liked when I saw him play a couple of years ago against USC, Trey Donaldson from Auburn. Naomi Barrett returns. Will Shedder returns, and then Sam Walters transfers in from Alabama. And then, as far as going out and recruiting, they have Scottie Pippen's son Justin, who's kind of a late riser in that 2024 high school class. So a lot of a big infusion of talent here for Michigan with the new coach. We're going to talk about SC obviously at the end of the podcast, but somewhat of a similar concept. But there are some bigger names here even with Michigan. So Nick, I'll let you give you first crack. What are your thoughts on the Big Blue Wolverines?
It's a really interesting team. I don't know if I mean that in a good or bad way, but imagine trying to forecast this roster and coming up with Trey Donaldson, Roddy Gale and Sam Walters as potential pieces, before the portal opens. Kind of crazy. But yeah, I think there's a lot of skill level on this team. Donaldson did improve as a shooter. He's a really good, like, on ball pesky defender. But I do think the other guys don't really guard all that well. I mean, Sam Walters, first off, really surprised he left Alabama. He had a significant role on a Final Four team as a freshman, and he wasn't like a super elite recruit, even though he's a good recruit out of the state of Florida. Can really shoot, but can't guard. Vlad Goldin, another, offense over defense center. I think same thing with Danny Wolf, even though he's really good on the defensive glass. So, kind of peg them as a top 20 offense, but, if they can get that defense into the top 50 range, I think you have a pretty good squad here. If they can't do that and struggle a little bit on that end, could see their defense being maybe in that 80, 90 range, and then being a bubble team down the road.
Jason, their OVR score, based upon projected minutes, is top three in the conference. And they have a lot of similar issues that, you're getting these big numbers because you're getting guys who are used to starting, a lot of starters in there, reportedly at a minimum playing a lot of minutes. What are your thoughts on Michigan?
Yeah, pretty high on them, and as guys who pretty closely cover USC, this is a really, really similar situation, obviously, with the coaching change and going hard into the transfer portal. And I think they'll actually play somewhat similarly. As Nick said, I think, both of them would be kind of offense first teams, and the question mark is going to be on defense. It's interesting to see like how a team with Golden and Wolf, two gigantic guys, can you put them both on the floor together? Because they may be your two best players, but I'm not sure that they go together. Although, both of them very, very talented. So yeah, I see them as being a tournament caliber team, toward the top half of the league for sure.
So when you're talking about active college basketball coaching legends, given recent retirements, you kind of fall to Tom Izzo being just, probably number one as far as the legendary categories, length of tenure in Michigan State. He hasn't won as many championships, obviously, as Bill Self. He hasn't even won as many championships as Dan Hurley, but this is a guy who has delivered his team to the NCAA tournament every single year since 1998. That's a remarkable stretch, as if fans of a lot of programs can appreciate. And certainly USC fans, you get a little bit of a slip up one year, things don't look right, you're all of a sudden you're out of the NCAA tournament, and he just manages to do it year after year after year after year. Certainly scheduling tough teams has been helpful for him, because, in recent years, he's made it in with, 10 and 10, 11 and 8, 11 and 9, even 9 and 11 records. This is an interesting team because they went to last season as kind of a projected top 10 team in the country. They struggled in an exhibition game. And then when the season actually came around, in particular, A.J. Hogarth did not have a really strong season. Malik Hall didn't have a great one. Tyson Walker stepped up. He had a nice season. But all three of those guys are gone now. And Hogarth actually could have come back and played more for Michigan State. And it was basically Izzo showing him the door and saying, no, we're going to move on with kind of a youth movement, which means that really leaves, Jaden Akins as like the lone kind of experienced scorer on this roster. And yeah, it's a developmental roster. On this AVR or OVR scores, it's, at the bottom. Not dead last, but really close to the bottom of the conference. Now, they did bring in Frankie Fiddler, who had really nice, advanced stats at Nebraska Omaha. I do kind of wonder about this team. Like, I almost feel like Izzo's going to have to perform some magic here. I don't know what your thoughts are, Jason.
I'm with you, Chase. You've got to squint a little bit and just say Tom Izzo over and over again to get there, to elevate this team, because If you just do it on personnel, they are not a top half of the conference team. I don't think that's really debatable. Frankie Fiddler is going to have to be the guy coming over from Omaha. He was top 10 in the country in percentage of minutes played last year. Like they could not take him off the floor, and it may be a similar situation at MSU, right? He's 6'7". He's another one of these guys that just does everything well. He can score at all three levels. He takes care of the ball. He rebounds. So very impressive player. But beyond that, like they're not returning a ton. And as you said, AJ Hogard leaving, Tyson Walker leaving, like they're looking for some other guys to step up. And for me, I don't see them being a top half of the conference team. I think even if you give some brownie points for the Izzo effect, I just can't get there with the roster.
Nick, where are you at with Michigan State?
Yeah, I'm not there either in terms of the top half of the conference team. Even at the guard spot, right? Like Jeremy Fears, fairly high profile recruit, he got shot and missed a good chunk of the year. So I'm not sure if they're going to go with him or roll with Jace Richardson at the one. Another talented player, son of Jay Rich, but again, like freshman point, it's really tough to be a freshman point guard and have a substantial impact. We saw Isaiah Collier firsthand, really talented player, and he had a lot of ups and downs for USC. Yeah, I think that the Akins Fiddler duo is just going to have to score a lot, score efficiently, and show a ton of leadership to pull this team to bubble level. They were a little bit better last year than their record indicated. They did finish 16th in KenPom. But again, Chase, like you mentioned, no Hogard, no Tyson Walker, and no Malik Hall. It was another really key guy for them. So, yeah, I definitely would be lower on them.
We're moving on to Minnesota, and Ben Johnson took over the head coach there for Richard Pitino starting for the 2021-2022 season. And as you look at it, he's actually now he had a really bad second year. So, you have to factor that in. But he bounced back pretty nicely last season, going 9-11 in the Big Ten, 19-15 overall. Didn't make the NCAA tournament. Did play though in the NIT, beat Butler there before losing to Indiana State. So that was, I think for Minnesota, that was an impressive season. Minnesota hasn't had a ton of basketball success in the last quarter century, let's say. But this team is a little bit interesting. Their top player from last year was clearly Dawson Garcia. He's back. He's the only, I think, on last year's team, he was the only top 100 recruit on the entire roster. Cam Christie, who was like their other kind of top player, went to do the NFL draft thing. I can't remember if he stayed in the draft or not. But he's
Stayed in.
gone. He stayed in. Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think he transferred anywhere either. So I mean he's gone. But their third best player, Mike Mitchell is back, or their third leading scorer, I should say. Mike Mitchell is back. And they brought in a couple interesting transfers. And they got Lucy, I guess it's
Think it's
Lucy
Lakai.
Lakai. Okay, thank you, Jace. Lakai Patterson from Charlotte and Frank Mitchell of Canisius. This team looks on paper pretty decent, pretty competitive. I mean, I would on paper it looks like it's a right in about the middle or so of the Big Ten. Femi Odukale is also a transfer from Mexico State. He looks pretty good. They got a transfer from Oregon, Brendan Rigsby, who's not really a super good player, but like a decent player for Oregon. And I don't even think he's going to start for Minnesota. So that's for a team like Minnesota, I think that's a kind of a big deal. So on paper, Nick, this team actually looks pretty decent, little pretty competitive. And I would not, I'm not sure I'm ready to say they're going to make the NCAA tournament, but I'm definitely saying, they're going to compete for the NCAA tournament. That's where I'm at least.
Yeah, I think you might be a little bit higher than me. I don't think they're like terrible, but they're another one of those teams I would probably group in like that bottom middle. that we've been using a lot. They just don't really have like that elite high-end talent. Dawson Garcia, I think, will have to score a lot. If they do have a solid amount of depth for a typical Minnesota team. And I don't want to take anything away from Ben Johnson, because I think given that school's level of resources and what they've been historically, I think he's done a pretty good job with that program. I think they absolutely should have the goal of making the tournament, but I just don't think I can quite get there with these guys.
Jason, where are you at?
I'm not there either. I may even go so far as saying instead of the bottom of the middle, they may be the top of the bottom. Dawson Garcia is awesome, right? Like he would be on the all returning player team for this conference. He is the guy. He took three more shots per game than anyone else on the team, while also being a leading rebounder, great shot blocker, like great player. And now the question is, you bring in these transfers, like, does the supporting cast hold up? I'm not quite sure that it does. So top of the bottom for me.
We should also say that Elijah Hawkins, who led the Big Ten in assists last season, big time assist guy, had 7.5 assists per game. He transferred out, so he's not on the team any longer. Patterson is going to have to make up for those assists. Moving on to Nebraska and Fred Hoiberg. Made the NCAA tournament last year, finally, for Hoiberg. Breakthrough type season in Nebraska, which obviously is historically probably amongst the incumbents. Nebraska and Penn State are maybe Rutgers too. They're like the lonely stepchildren of having great success in college basketball, unfortunately. And Nebraska's just they made the NCAA tournament for the first time last season since 2014, and before 2014 it was 1998. So they made the NCAA tournament for only second time since 1998 last season. Made it to the they were 8-9. It was an 8 seed against the 9 seed against Texas A&M, and Texas A&M just basically absolutely obliterated them. The final score was only 15, but I think at halftime, I mean, it was just one of those games where Texas A&M just taking it to them like crazy. Their big player from last year, Tominaga, is gone. So he's not around anymore. They do have some, interesting pieces back. I'm not super thrilled with every, they have Juwan Gary back and Bryce Williams. And unfortunately, Rink Mast, who's one of their better players last season, he's sitting out he's injured. So he's going to sit out the entire season. They have Raleigh Worcester coming over from Utah. Braxton Maia coming over from Washington, Andrew Morgan transferring from North Dakota State. A lot of transfers. At the very end, they brought in a Berkey, a Buchanel from UCLA. I gotta say that they project OVR score and toward that bottom, in that bottom tier in the Big Ten. And I kind of see them there. I know Hoiberg had that big breakthrough last season, Jason, but I'm not a believer in this team, and I don't know. Where are you at?
I'm slightly higher on them. They bring back a lot of returning scoring, factoring in transfers in, right? Just how much do these guys fill it up? And in terms of the incumbents, they're right there with Indiana. Now, it's not, unlike Indiana, a lot of it is transfers. It's not all guys that played for Nebraska, but they've got a lot of options, a lot of bodies. Bryce Williams, right? Transfers in from Charlotte and is an excellent deep threat, and he shoots free throws pretty well too, right? He does a little bit of everything. Generated maybe a little bit more on the defensive end than he did at Charlotte this past year, but his 2-point shooting was down a tick. So I would like to see him improve in that area. But otherwise, Juwan Gary, strong player. He only played 55% of Nebraska's minutes last year. He missed some games. Then he came off the bench down the stretch. So I would expect his role to increase this year. He's He's very good at taking care of the ball. He can get up, he can block shots, he can rebound more than, he's 6'6". His size would suggest that he's not as good of a rebounder and a shot blocker as he actually is. So I see this team like being kind of in the middle of the conference tournament conversation.
So, Nick, they did go to 12-8 last year. Am I shading them too much?
Maybe a little bit. It's really too bad that Mast is hurt, because if they had Mast, I'd be super in on this team. I think they're so fun. I mean, you've got like that returning production, with Williams and Gary. You would have had it with Mast, but then Hoiberg basically went out and got a bunch of lottery tickets on guys, who had really poor years last year, and came from bad offensive systems, but either have talent or have shown ability in the past. So Connor Cision is kind of the poster child for that. Had a really good freshman year at Wisconsin, and then a really bad sophomore year. But if you would have told me he would have been all Big Ten last year, coming off his freshman year, I would have believed you. Just great movement shooter. And then, you've got Gavin Griffiths and Burke as these other lottery tickets, guys that were hotshot recruits, 6'8", 6'9", with skill. The one played for Steve Peichel at Rutgers, obviously the defensive coach, and the other played for Mick Cronin, also a defensive coach. So, if Fred's able to unlock maybe like two out of those three to pair with that returning production, I think they get pretty interesting pretty quickly. But they do seem like a high variance team to me, because if like a Cijin, Griffiths, and Burke all flame out, I just don't know where that leaves you.
So Northwestern, Chris Collins. When I talked about the schools that historically had not had much success in the same tournament, I probably should have mentioned Northwestern, because prior to Chris Collins, they had not made the tournament going back for several decades. So Collins made the tournament in 2017, and then he's made the tournament each of the last two seasons. 12-8 in each of the last two seasons in the Big Ten, has a pretty decent returning roster that he's going with. They lose Bowie. That's a big loss, obviously. But Brooks Barnheiser is back. They've got they've got Ty Berry back. They bring in Jalen Leach from Fairfield. Matthew Nicholson is back. And Nick Martelli is back. So it's not a super deep team, because they didn't really seem to bring in some, like, all the big name transfer players. But at the top, at least there's starters here. You're seeing some proven production. And given Chris Collins' success the last couple of seasons, this really, I think, could be a team that, he's gonna have to play as starters lots of minutes, but I think he could get them back to the NCAA tournament. What are your thoughts, Nick?
I like this team a lot. I don't think they have like the super high ceiling. But when you talk about the Leach, Barry, Barnheiser trio, at the 1 through 3 spots, that's up there with anybody in the league and most teams in the country. Very experienced. I love Barnheiser. Barnheiser just does everything, offense, defense, ultimate glue guy. And I think our friend SB really, rewarded him in the overall rating, I think correctly. Yeah, pretty thin. I think that's the thing. Like, if one or two of these guys get in foul trouble, they get into trouble pretty quickly. Chris Collins does it again and again with these, teams that he has up there. Lots of toughness. Kind of feel like an 8 or 9 seed here to me.
Where are you at, Jason?
Yeah, I like the team to be in the tournament as well, Chase. A few months back, I think we were looking at 247 did like an initial Big Ten projection, 1 through 18. They had Northwestern 17th, and that was one of the ones that jumped out at me as just not passing the the smell test. You've basically got the team back other than Boubui. Obviously, Boubui is a huge loss, but like the downgrade between Boubui and Jalen Leach, let's say, right? They don't play exactly the same position, but you shuffle around the lineup. That's the kind of one-to-one trade you're making in the starting lineup. And like, I don't see that downgrade taking Northwestern from a team that's comfortably in the field to being like the second to worst team in this conference. About Leach, right? He's super important in that he's the marquee transfer that's going to fill that slot in the lineup, but it obviously not playing the exact same role on the court. Like he was mostly an undersized 3-4 at Fairfield, but high IQ player, like low turnovers, generates a bunch of steals himself. Really great shooting splits, 90% free throw shooter. Like, there's a lot to like. So I think you plug him into the lineup, I still think you're looking at a tournament team.
So one of the really, really big surprises of last year was after the firing of Chris Holtzman at Ohio State, the decision was made to elevate or remove the interim tag on the interim coach, Jake Diebler, who's obviously on Holtzman's staff. Now, it's kind of an odd decision on multi-level, especially given it's Ohio State and their budget is huge. But Diebler did have success. This Ohio State team, I think, was 3-9 when in the Big Ten when he took over. And they finished, winning eight of their final 10 Big Ten games. Not eight of, sorry, six of their final eight Big Ten games. Beat Iowa in the Big Ten tournament before losing a close game to Illinois, and then won a couple games in the NIT. So all things told, it was a kind of surprisingly rescued season by Diebler. As far as like where they're at, like roster wise now, their top player from last season, it was Jameson Battle and Bruce Thornton, but Bruce Thornton is back. And they have some, interesting pieces to go along with him. Michi Johnson from South Carolina, Micah Parrish from San Diego State. And then they have the two like big time former recruits that haven't really hit yet, Sean Stewart from Duke and Aaron Bradshaw from Kentucky. So there's other guys as well. So there's some real talent here. I don't know what we should be expecting from Diebler. As far as the OVR scores, Ohio State kind of ranks toward like the upper half or so, projection wise. That should potentially mean this is an NCAA tournament team, maybe even up to a sixth seed. I don't know. I know that Torvik has them as a number 38 team overall. Jason, where are you at with this team?
Probably right around there. I think the big question for me is, right, like your two best players are in the backcourt, and they're probably both what you would consider to be point guards. Obviously, I think they're going to play both of them because they're the two guys, Bruce Thornton and Michi Johnson. So it's like you're covered in the backcourt in terms of handling the ball, like, but then the question is, shooting and everything in the front court, defense, right? So I love Bruce Thornton. Like, 4.8 assists to 1.2 turnovers last year, like, really puts his guys in great spots and great at getting to the line, and an 85% free throw shooter when he gets there. So I love that. I interested in the fit with Michi Johnson. He carried a lot of the load at South Carolina last year. That put a drag, I would say, on some of his shooting numbers, but he's also a strong assist guy, very good free throw shooter. So I see that, but like, that's kind of, they're going to have to carry the team because I'm not sure at the other spots, right? You've got these transfers that maybe didn't work out at other places, and you're trying to plug them in and have them play a bigger role. So I think those transfers are going to determine how well the team plays.
Nick, where were you at?
Yeah, I'm pretty low, actually. I would put them towards the bottom of the league. I think Thornton is maybe the best offensive guard in the conference. Can shoot, can pass, doesn't turn the ball over. Jason mentioned it. I'm lower on Michi. Like Michi, he's had 4 years of college, hasn't shot 40% in any year. undersized, and kind of like did play that role a little bit with Talen Cooper at South Carolina. And, you know, while Cooper dramatically improved his shooting splits going from Minnesota to South Carolina, Michi only did like very marginally and still was pretty poor overall. And then with the front court, I mean, you're just bidding on big time development from Stewart and Bradshaw. And, you know, these are both McDonald's All-Americans and, you know, they have a year of college under their belt, but you just didn't really see much last year. Stewart is a monster rebounder on a permanent basis. So maybe if you turn him loose, you know, he becomes like a 10 and 10 guy. But, you know, between him and Bradshaw, I don't know how you space the floor at all. Both are almost undersized. Or Stewart's almost an undersized five to me. Bradshaw's obviously a five. You might think he's a four. And, you know, Micah Parrish, he's a solid player. I don't want to take anything away from him, but kind of just a guy, I think, as opposed to a high-level starter. But, you know, I think when you look at last year's team, you know, they didn't make the tournament, you know, finished the year strong, but you're taking Roddy Gale, Jameson Battle, Dill Bonner, and Zed Key off that team. And I think Felix Okpara last year as a big was substantially better as a defender, but even offensively, than Stewart or Bradshaw. I don't think you're upgrading talent-wise, so I would look for them to take a little bit of a step back, actually, here.
So at Mike Rhodes' Penn State team went 9-11 last year in the Big Ten. They also had an overall losing record going 16-17. So they did not play any postseason games after the Big Ten tournament. They kind of had a big three last year of Ace Baldwin, Kanye Clary, and Kudus Wahab. And of those three, Ace Baldwin is the only returner. He is also, if you look at these OVR scores, I think stands far and away as like the best on his team compared to everybody else. I don't think there's anyone who's quite the same level, although arguably Braden Smith, but certainly Fletcher Lawyer is better than any second best player on Penn State's team. Because of that, they are actually at the bottom of our OVR projections. I'm not sure where you are with them, Nick, but I would not, you know, somebody's got to like finish toward the bottom of the conference, and that's probably where I'd project Penn State.
I think I would too, but you know, I do love Ace Baldwin, just a tremendous like two-way guard, unbelievable point of attack defender he is. So I think the path for them is like they really need Freddie DeLeon to have a breakout. He started his career at Tennessee and didn't really get on the court there, but was a pretty highly regarded recruit. DeMarco Dunn and Puff Johnson both come from North Carolina. You know, didn't see a ton of minutes there. And I think they're going to have to play, you know, fairly substantial roles. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think I'd pick him at the bottom of the league. But, you know, in terms of like if you're talking about a team that's 18th out of 18th, yeah, they'd be a very, very good last place team.
Yeah. So, Jason, Torvik does have them 18th, but still a top 80 team.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, no shame in that, but I tend to agree. You know, we're all USC guys. We've been trying to find at USC a point guard all through portal season. And man, like Ace Baldwin checks a lot of the boxes we've been looking for, right? He's got insanely high assist rate. He takes care of the ball. He's top 25 in the country in steal rate. He gets to the foul line. He shoots 83% at the foul line. But obviously, you know, where it's he needs to improve his shooting. 33% from three is fine, but you know, 43% on high volume from two is not ideal. And that's sort of like been the deal with him dating back to his time at VCU as well. So one awesome piece, and I would say a lot of question marks, and that's why I'd have them towards the bottom.
So national runner up, Purdue returns Matt Painter. I think the last question remaining for Matt Painter really, I think, was, he had a bit of a monkey on his back because of, you know, losing losing the first round as a one seed, 2023 to Fairleigh Dickinson, comes back and gets to the national final against UConn. I mean, UConn was just kind of a buzzsaw. I think Pinto did a tremendous job. He had, previously, I don't think ever gotten past the Sweet 16 mark. So for him to make that run past Sweet 16, I think was huge for the program. Zach Edey's gone. He's the best player in the country for the last 2 years. Eventually those guys leave. They do have some other losses, Purdue. But they do. Brayden Smith is back, which is like a huge thing because he was clearly, I think, the second best player. Lance Jones is gone. Mason Gill is transferred. But they do have Fletcher Loyer back. Camden Heidi, who had that crazy dunk in the Final Four, he's back. And then Miles Colvin, who was a freshman last year, highly recruited guy, he's back. So combining those guys with someone's got to take over at that five spot. That's always a key for Painter. That's like a huge spot. Who's going to play the five? Daniel Jacobson has looked good. He's a fresh incoming freshman. Not a really super highly ranked guy in high school, but he's seems to be like rising late. I think a lot of a lot of hopes are going to be placed on his shoulders. I don't know if he can fully meet those expectations, but I think between him and Kaufman Wren, that you're going to get good enough play from Purdue, and then it's Painter. I fully expect him to be competitive at the top of the conference. As far as OVR goes, they're right kind of in the middle of things for returning players. That's because they really did not go out and hit the portal hard. Notwithstanding that, I still think I think they'll be good. Where are you at with them, Jason?
Yeah, I think old school roster construction, right? Like bring in your nice freshman class, like let it replace the guys you're losing, and don't recruit over anybody, and no transfer. So a throwback there. I think this is one. I think we talked about Michigan State earlier, right? Where it was like, can you get there with the roster? Maybe not, but it's Tom Izzo. I think maybe this is recency bias clouding me, but I'm more inclined to make that same kind of distinction for Purdue just based off of what Matt Painter is able to do year after year after year. I mean, that plus Brayden Smith, like absurd assist guy, best in the league, 43% 3-point shooter, nationally ranked in steals percentage on D. Like you can understand why he's going to be the man this year at that team and probably within the league. And also like insanely high defensive box plus minus. So you've got a go-to guy, you've got a go-to coach. I trust them to fill in the rest.
So, Nick, Matt Painter's made the tournament, not in the last 10 seasons. Almost every year has been competitive for the Big Ten. Do you think that's going to repeat itself this upcoming season?
Yeah, so I'll make one note too. I think we did skip Oregon, so we can go back to Oregon
Oh,
next.
well, we're doing the newcomers last.
I'm sorry. Yeah, my fault. Yeah. Okay, cool. So on Purdue, yeah, I would take them top three in the league. I just kind of buy it. You talk about Smith, potentially the best player in the conference, but Lawyer's no slouch. He had a great year last year. Kaufman Wren, I think he's primed for a breakout as kind of the feature big. But you have Heidi, this explosive athlete who's efficient, and he seems primed for a breakout. And Caleb First a few years ago looked really good and got a little bit buried last year just because that team was so good. Their core pieces were. So I think he's a very, very quality player. I think they kind of were really good like 1 through 10 last year. They lose Edey, but I still think the rotation and the depth of the caliber of player is still really good for Purdue. So I'm buying them.
So, Steve Picciol at Rutgers has three of the most interesting incoming players this season. He has top five, potentially top three overall recruits, Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. Ace Bailey, not to be confused with Ace Baldwin, two totally different players. And then also Jordan Durkacz, who we discussed on the USChoops.com podcast before, transferring in from Merrimack College,
Merrimack.
had just an amazing kind of like filling out the box score type player. They Purdue or Rutgers was last season a 7-13 team, which kind of tended toward second to last in the conference, but they were still pretty competitive, very tough to win there, their home games. a lot of their top players are gone, but they're being replaced now with these kind of like big name newcomers. Nick, I'm going to throw it to you first. Harper, Bailey, Harper and Bailey, you saw play live. You like Durkac. Are you buying Rutgers?
I'm not buying them, Chase. I'd go bottom middle, maybe top bottom for these guys. Loved Harper. I think Harper's a stud. 6'6", can score like fairly efficiently at all three levels. Not like a knockdown shooter, but pretty good for being an 18-year-old, has the size. Ace Bailey, I just wasn't impressed with him at McDonald's. He took a lot of these like fadeaway long twos. He's a good athlete. He's got a lot of length. I think he'll be able to shoot eventually, but there's really nothing about Pikiell's system, which is a defensive-oriented system, suggests that this is going to be the perfect fit for Bailey to walk in and score 20 a game, on 50, 40, 90 shooting or anything like that. So I think he'll underwhelm. The transfers, they brought in a few guys, but I don't think any of these guys are super high impact. Zach Martini, he was at Princeton, was 8 points, 3 rebounds. I don't think they have any playable size either, really. I guess like Emmanuel Ugbale and Lathan Somerville are their centers, but they don't really seem like high major rotation guys. So I think what they did is, I'm a big Durkac guy. I think he'll be a really good steals guy and a glue guy, but he struggles to shoot. So it seems to me that they had the Goldman Sachs guy fund NIL to get Harper and Bailey, and they were the big names, but kind of just think this team is more sexy than functional at this point.
Jason, also, we should probably mention Tyson Acuff coming in from Eastern Michigan. Jeremiah Williams, the top returning player for Rutgers. Maybe they top out at whatever six, whatever Ace Bailey is 6'8", but everyone else is topping out at 6'7". They just play that way. They're a little bit shorter than everybody else, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, or you say, are you selling, saying that I'm not believing in this team?
I think I'm selling. I mean, you've got two top tier freshmen, but you're putting everything on their backs, right? And like a lot of times you just don't know if they're going to be able to do it as a true freshman. Ace, right? Super athletic guy. He's the high flyer. He finished second in the dunk contest at McDonald's, but like then, Nick watches the game and it's like, oh, I don't know. He can pass, he can defend. And I will say, like, he and Harper have complementary skill sets, right? The passing, the defense, the athleticism with Bailey, and then kind of Harper's a guy who's maybe more physical, long wingspan. He can get to the bucket. He can absorb a bunch of contact. He's not the guy that's going to jump out of the gym, may struggle to guard a little bit at this level. But like, so I see how they can play together. I can't see how they can play together and be competitive in this league with the rest of the supporting cast.
Last of the incumbent was Big Ten teams, Greg Gard, Wisconsin. He actually got Wisconsin to 11-9 last season. So good on him. They had some departures at the end of last season, kind of the notable one being AJ Storr transferred out. They do have Stephen Crowell back, and they have Max Klizmann back. Tookie Hepburn is gone. Tyler Wahl is gone. They did get Cameron Hunter from Central Arkansas as a transfer, Xavier Amos from Northern Illinois. Greg Gard is, he gets Wisconsin to the tournament in about every other year, essentially since he's taken over. Bo Ryan got them there every year. So Greg Gard is in there every other year. I'm, you look on the OVR thing, they're kind of at that mark between middle and bottom tier. I think it will be tough for them to make the NCAA tournament, but by the same token, even in seasons where Gard doesn't make the NCAA tournament, his teams typically aren't that bad. So I don't know where you are with them, Jason, but And they do make the tournament more than every other year on a card. They make it, I would say, maybe two out of every 3 years. So, going into a season, you would think they're going to be competitive. I'm just not sure. I'm super impressed with this roster.
Yeah, they're in that top of the bottom category that we've been using. Feels like a lot. Crowell, I like Crowell, right? He's gonna man the middle for you. He's another never transferred guy that's now going into year five, I believe, in Madison. And you know what you're getting with him, like efficient scoring inside, ability to step out on occasion, strong rebounder. At the same time, like he's not setting any shot blocking records for being 7 feet tall. And then, beyond that, like it drops off a little bit to your Max Kleizmitz and your Cam Hunters. And I have them top of the bottom.
Where are you at, Nick?
Maybe like very slightly higher on him, just because I feel like year after year with Greg Gard at Wisconsin, you doubt the roster, and then he like somehow goes 500 in league play, or even a little bit better than that. I do think with these guys, it's a heavy lift, but I was never a huge AJ Store guy, and I think people will paint that as a huge loss, but I kind of thought that team was good just because they had lots of guys who new fundamentals, and I think guards a little bit. He's not a great, I think, recruiter, or they're lacking NIL. But in terms of in-game coaching, he does seem to get a lot out of his teams. So, yeah, I think maybe, bottom middle for me with these guys.
So today we got an announcement from the NCAA that, from a personnel's perspective, I actually think might be the biggest news of the season for the Big Ten. And it hasn't been talked a lot about, but the NCAA denied the appeal of Oregon's Nafale Dante for an additional year of eligibility. And look, I've already just got into with Oregon fans several times on this. Here's the issue with Dante. He's missed a bunch of games during his career, notwithstanding he's supposed to be a great kid, a good student. He's missed a bunch of games due to various reasons, mostly injury. The big seasons where he didn't play a ton were 2019, 2020, and 2020, 21. Now, 2020, 21 obviously is the famous COVID season. That's where everyone gets this extra season or this extra season of eligibility. He only played six games that season. But if we remember, the way the NCAA pitched it was it's a use it or lose it season. It's a free season. It's not going to count against you. You're not going to get an additional season in addition to that season. It just won't count against you if you didn't play. He basically didn't play. He played six games. He was injured most of that season, and so he didn't get to play a ton. And he was basically wanted credit for that season. Now, to augment his case, in addition to the injuries he's had in the last three seasons, including this past one where he missed a lot of the season, his first season at Oregon, 2019-2020, he only played in 12 games. But here's the wrinkle on that. He missed the first 10 games of the season because there was an issue between he and Oregon and the NCAA processing his transcripts. He was coming from overseas. He was reclassifying up a class, and he needed to get his transcript in late. And it was not submitted until August. And the NCAA basically said on it, Oregon's on a quarter system. So their classes started and he missed the deadline to enroll because the NCAA had not certified his transcript paper. So there's an issue there, but the submission itself was a late submission because he was reclassifying. And so by the time he was approved, it's when Oregon started their second. Their second quarter or their winter quarter, which actually started in the earlier part of December. So he started playing then. He played a couple months, got hurt, missed about 6 weeks, but then came back at the end of the season, played games in February and March. So he basically played most of the season when he was eligible. And I guess he wanted credit for that season. But the NCAA wouldn't give it to him, and I'm not really surprised because he played in December, January, February, and March. He never had a season-ending injury, and the reason he didn't play more in November is because of this transcript issue. So, all that being said, he's not eligible to play. So he won't be playing for Oregon this season. And the reason I bring that up is because if he was playing for Oregon this season, I think he'd easily be the best player in the conference, and he's not there. So instead, you're going to have to rely on the other very talented players that Dana Altman has assembled for his team. But, and this is something we would talk about routinely in our USA Hoops podcast, it just seems like the heyday of Altman at Oregon is a bygone thing. That if you look at Oregon, even though they're making the NCAA tournament now under Altman, you know, they made a Sweet 16 in 2021 and they made it in 2019. The really competitive, the really good teams from Altman, you don't really see them anymore. The last, you know, really the last four seasons have been kind of mediocre. He's lost in the last three seasons, he's lost 15 games, 15 games, 12 games. He's a little bit older of a coach himself personally. He's been coaching for you know, decades at this point. I would not be surprised if this is last year at Oregon. I mean, there was already rumors about that going into this past offseason. That being said, he's got some good players. I really like Jackson Schjelstad. Point guard. He has Keyshawn Bartholomew now as a fifth-year senior backing up. TJ Bamba, who was at Villanova this past season, previously played it for Kyle Smith at Washington State, was succeeded there in the Pacific Northwest. He's there. Former big-time recruits Kwame Evans and Mookie Cook are there, and Nate Biddle, who's been hurt a lot, but when he's played, has had some good minutes. They just picked up Jamari Phillips. They got Rahel Moss as a transfer. So, I mean, all that being said, Jason, there's definitely talent on this team, you know, but because it's a little bit uneven, and you know, they really relied on Nwafale Dante to be their stud, and he's not there anymore. I see them more kind of like, you know, that bubble range as a team.
Yeah, interesting team, right? They're deep, but maybe not top heavy, and I think we'll see some similar themes with some of these other teams coming up as well. You know, Brandon Angell, Stanford transfer, lethal shooter, 62% from two, 45% from three is just absurd. And some of these guys kind of like your Nate Biddle, Kwame Evans, I know box plus minus isn't everything, but they're some of the top projected defensive players in the league. So I do think Altman is going to be able to piece something together. I'm not sure about the ceiling, but I think the floor is probably the middle of the league.
Where are you at, Nick?
Yeah, I think they're a top half of the Big Ten team, but don't see them competing. I think amongst the top three or four, so I'd probably have them in that five to seven range, I guess. Shellstad's good. I mean, he had a lot of flashes, and he could be an all-league guard, I think, this year. Bamba's rock solid as a two. But I think if you're talking about a core of like seven or eight guys, they've got seven or eight Big Ten caliber players here. Biddle's really good on a permanent basis, can rebound. Raheem Moss from Toledo, I think, is a Big Ten caliber guard. Same thing with Keyshawn Bartholomew. Even if they're not, super, super high end. So, I'm high on this team relatively. Kwame Evans was a guy Duke sniffed around out in the portal, ended up staying at Oregon, big NIL guy. So he had a bad shooting freshman year, but he did make several threes against USC. I remember those vividly. So if he can get into that, 35 to 40% from three, along with what he brings from a size and length standpoint, he's going to be a really good player too. So, yeah, I think they're a top half, but would have picked them to win the league with Dante. So not having him is a big loss.
So I don't know if there's any coach in the country who kind of just conceded that his plan had not worked out the way he envisioned, like Mick Cronin. Heading into the season before last offseason, it was clear UCLA had problems with NIL, weren't going to be able to attract the kinds of transfers they wanted. So Mick Cronin made the decision to look overseas and bring in a bunch of players from Europe. And with the exception of Ide Mara, they're all gone now. And there are some other existing players that have transferred, and they're now being replaced with more conventional transfer portal players now that UCLA has stabilized its NIL. Maybe the most significant is Kobe Johnson from USC, but big name Sky Clark, who was at Louisville this past season. Eric Daly was at Oklahoma State. He was a ranked player coming out of college or high school, had a good freshman year at Oklahoma State. Tyler Billadeau had a really kind of out of nowhere, really strong offensive season for Oregon State. Very prized pickup for kind of a front court player out of portal. William Kyle the third, kind of just like an athletic monster down low, just dunk the ball kind of guy, from South Dakota State transferring in. And they're going to be paired up with the returning players, which are Dylan Andrews at point guard, Lazar Stefanovic at the wing, Sebastian Mack at guard. They're also bringing in Dominic Harris from LMU, kind of a 3-point specialist. And in addition to that, they have these two freshmen in Eric Freeney and then Trent Perry, who's California Player of the Year and led his team to back-to-back state championships at Harvard Westlake, was originally committed to USC as the kind of centerpiece of that class, and then decided that he was going to move over and go to UCLA. So there's a lot of players here. Cronin has a reputation of getting all the defense he can get out of his guys. We'll see if he's got enough offense here. There's a lot of guys that don't necessarily aren't the most efficient offensive players, but we shall see. Nick, where are you at with UCLA?
It is such a flat roster, talent-wise. I think you look at ESPN for World's ratings. They've got one dude over seven. That's Bilodeau, 7.07, and then a bunch of dudes in that like 5 to 7 range. So I guess like the positives to that, I think if they have a few injuries, they're going to be okay. The negatives to that is they don't really have the high ceiling. I think it would have been better if they would have had like 8 or 9 rotation guy potential rotation guys with a higher level of talent, and maybe not the 1 through 13 where you get like Devin or a Trent Perry is like a walk-on that they're giving NIL to. So yeah, I think they're solid. Mick Cronin's a very good coach. I think they'll be able to defend enough. Kobe will get some steals, but do have a hard time buying this team as like a top 10 or 15 team, like I'm seeing in some of the projections here. So I would say like middle of the pack, Big Ten, maybe upper middle.
Jason, I think the biggest difference between the approach that Mick Cronin took to his portal recruiting and what Eric Musselman did at USC is Cronin really recruited conventional, like to the traditional positions. He went out and got a point guard, Sky Clark. He went out and got shooting guards in Dominic Harris, and then Kobe Johnson is kind of a 2/3. He went out and got two conventional power forwards, Eric Daly and Tyler Bilodeau. He went out and got a conventional five man in William Kyle the third. I mean, these guys are kind of locked to their positions, and other than Kobe Johnson, you're probably not going to see them play maybe more than one or two different spots. So I think he seems to have an idea of where what he wants, or it looks like we can tell what he wants from these players. But the way that the roster is actually constructed, it really almost builds like a first team and a second team, and you wonder like, is there going to be room for guys to move between positions? I don't know. Where are your thoughts with all this, Jason?
Yeah, fascinating team. I think upper middle for me. Some of the big positives, right? Just in terms of guys they have on their roster that have produced at the college level, they're second in the conference in terms of how many points per game is just on their roster right now. They're also close to the top of the league in terms of how much they return from last year's team. So they're merging in guys that played with some solid but not spectacular transfers. I really like Bilodeau's game. I think, very efficient at 6'9", like led the way for Oregon State last year offensively. Shot, I want to say, close to 60% on twos. He can step out.
He can, you know, he took 85 threes last year and made 35% of them. So like, I like that player. You know, Kobe Johnson, we know well from USC, right, is going to be one of the highest rated individual defenders in the league. So I like a lot of the pieces. Question the ceiling and just kind of like how highly they've been rated in a lot of the offseason stuff, but I do think they're a tournament team in the top half of this league for sure.
So Eric Musselman arrives at USC from Arkansas, goes and builds a completely new roster. The only returning player on the team is Harrison Hornery, who wasn't really even a rotational player for USC this past season. You know, he brings in a ton of new players. No, you know, all these guys, and not a single one of them has been a starting point guard in the past, and only Josh Cohen has been a starting five man in the past. But there's been a lot of productivity from these guys. Desmond Clark was the Big East most improved player this past season. St. Thomas, in addition to being the conference player of the year for, I think it was the Big Sky, I mean, just, you know, one of the best players nationally in rebounding scoring. Terrence Williams started Michigan, finally had a really productive season. Chibuzo Agbo had a really nice productive season for Boise this past year. Josh Cohen was all A-10 for UMass. Rashawn Aggie was one of the top rebounders in the country. Matt Noling, two seasons ago, was all Ivy League. Bryce Pope was all Big West, I think twice for UC San Diego. Clark Slackard was all Ivy League for Penn. Kevin Patton Jr. was one of the top freshmen in the WCC last season. And then you get the freshmen in Yates, Elohim, and Jalen Shelley. You know, we have an entire podcast that just covers USC basketball. So you can get our deeper thoughts there. But, you know, from the way I see it, there, because, you know, Mus went out and got all of these kind of like guys who had productivity, you know, it kind of at the expense of traditional point guard and things like that. They rank very high in OVR. I we'll see what Mus is able to do with him. Obviously, he struggled this past season in Arkansas, but before that, he had a ton of success in Arkansas and getting teams to the tournament and progressing through the tournament. So, we learned today from open practice that Mus was not able to recruit all the players he wanted to because of the transfer requirements and on transcripts for USC. But he ended up making up for that by just going for a bunch of grad transfers. So, Jason, there's gonna be a ton of opportunity to talk about USC and the USC podcast. But just for Big Ten fans, what's your overall view on the team?
Yeah, I'm pretty bullish on USC. I think, you know, similar template to what UCLA did, but maybe with just like better players. The difference being that UCLA had a base to build back on from last year, and USC had to do it all in the portal. This is not a roster that's gonna wow you and maybe have a bunch of like first team all conference guys, but it is a roster where guys 3 through 9 or 10 are probably going to be better than who they're playing on a nightly basis. And that really plays into Eric Musselman's system, which is track meets, foul fests, wars of attrition, right? If he can knock your top guy out of the game or get into the other team's bench, then I think there's going to be lots of mismatches for USC. Stylistically, they're also going to present a challenge, especially for teams that they're only going to play once in a season in a league that generally plays, you know, slower than average. I think it's a misnomer that the whole league is like plodding, but there aren't that many teams that run, and USC is going to be annoying to scout and to prep for. When we were doing our last USC podcast, I looked at returning productivity on the roster, not necessarily from USC to USC last year, because there's none, right? There's only Harrison Hornery, but just what types of scoring, minutes played, games started are on the roster from other college basketball programs last year. And I was surprised to find that USC has the most in all of those categories in this conference. So then I extended it to all of the power conference teams, which I guess is five now in basketball, because you lose the Pac-12, but you have the Big East as well. And USC, sure enough, has the most returning scoring,
the most minutes played, the most returning starts of any power conference team in America, which surprised even me as a USC guy. So I'm bullish on the roster. I just think some of these guys may not translate, but there are just enough of them on the roster that somebody is going to step up, and there's enough talent to bring this team toward the top half of the conference and into the March Madness.
Where are you at, Nick?
Yeah, pretty bullish as well. Jason kind of mentioned it. The strength of the roster is just the depth of talent. When you talk about that three through kind of like nine or so range, USC may go a little bit deeper than that, but I do think some of these guys might not translate, but you get enough of these lottery tickets that hit, and you're in a pretty good spot. So, lots of guys that shoot free throws well, can get to the line. I think there's upside in the shooting. I've talked about this on the USC Hoops podcast. Just when you look at their free throw numbers compared to their actual numbers, when you have those dudes entering a role that's lower usage and better shot quality, oftentimes you see improvement there. But I think they're just going to be really tough. They're very experienced. The big thing with them, right, is just does it all mesh together? Because you literally have no building blocks, as Jason mentioned. So it could go, very wrong, like you had at Arkansas this past year. But it's just such an experienced team with proven production that it's hard to see a super low floor with this group.
And the last team to cover, but I certainly don't think we'll be the last place team in the conference. Danny Sprinkle moving over from Utah State. Only 1 year at Utah State. Before that, Montana State. Still kind of a young coach. Takes over for Mike Hopkins at Washington. Not a lot of coaching changes, by the way, in the Big Ten, and having the newcomers really kind of represent the coaching changes. Grader is kind of interesting. He went out like Musselman and brought in a whole bunch of transfers. The big kind of big name one was the $2 million NIL package for Grade Osabor coming over from Utah State. I don't know if I believe that number, particularly since he played for Sprinkle in Utah State. DJ Davis, who was played previously in the Big West, coming over from Butler, and then you have like Tyree and a Chaco, Lewis Courtnight, Courtright, and Frank Kepnong, who was previously at Oregon, has had injury issues but can really play when he's healthy. Tyler Harris from a really strong freshman season up at Portland. So I mean, there's some talent here, Nick, on Washington's team. I'm not sure what Sprinkle can do to bring him together. He also has Zoom Diallo as a freshman point guard, highly recruited kid. What are your thoughts?
I would say middle for this team. So I'll refrain from the bottom middle or top middle. I think they're middle. Grado support gives them a floor. Proven production on a top NCAA tournament team in Utah State. I think he'll do well in the league. DJ Davis and Tyler Harris, I think they're solid. Not spectacular players, quality enough to play in the Big Ten, but don't think they're going to be all league guys or anything like that. So with those three, Kepnong does some nice things defensively. Mekhi Mason and Zoom, I think, are like okay rotation players this year. Zoom's got more upside, but it's just really tough for freshman guards. So yeah, I'll go with middle for these guys.
Where are you at, Jason?
Same middle. You got Osabor, $2 million man, right? Very efficient, does it all. Throwback game, makes his 2-point shots, bullies his way to the line. Not necessarily a good free throw shooter, but he gets there so often. I think it's still efficient for him. High block rate, elite rebounding. And then you've got DJ Davis, who's the best free throw shooter in America by percentage. He went 95 for 100 last year. So if he can get his 3-point shooting up at all, which, the free throw shooting would suggest he can, like, watch out. He was already fine at 34% on super high volume. So I like that as a core. And I like Sprinkle. Like, I think, in terms of coaches,
that have gotten the most out of their roster talent. He rates very highly. He hasn't had a number of like really outstanding teams on an absolute basis, but like from where he was coaching to the players he could recruit and bring in, like he definitely got the most out of them. And so I would expect that he would get the most out of this roster as well.
Do you think he can play Osmar and Kepning at the same time, or is that just kind of a pipe dream and you got to pick one or the other?
I don't know. I think they'll try it. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I think they have to try it just given the way the roster looks. But I mean, I don't think Osafor is going to space the floor, but you could kind of just go like Twin Towers and try to out rebound everybody.
Yeah. Okay, so podcast going long. I think we'll have another podcast at some point to actually talk about our personal predictions and the reasons for those. But I know that Jason wanted to at least go through, talk about coaches, and we'll try to do this very briefly. But why don't we just each of us give our list, if it makes sense, of maybe the Mount Rushmore of Big Ten, current Big Ten coaches, if that makes sense. And I'll go first since this is my crazy idea. And we're not going to do this based upon like necessarily like the greatest accomplishments, but like for sure that would be Tom Izzo, right? All his years, but like just heading into next season. And I think my four guys are probably Brad Underwood, oh gosh, Matt Painter, obviously. And then my last two, I think I'm going to go with Eric Musselman and Mick Cronin. I know that's going to make a lot of fans upset for the Izzo, Dusty Mayer on the list, but those would be my four. Jason, where are you? Who's on your Mount Rushmore?
I think Painter, Izzo, Underwood, and probably Mick. I think like Muss has done some great things in the tournament, but if you're talking about like regular season success and just like consistency of results, I think it's hard to argue with Mick. So he'd probably be my fourth.
Where are you at, Nick?
Yeah, Chase, I think I would actually go the same way you did. But some of that's recency bias with Michigan State. Obviously, if it's a career award, Izzo's number one, no question. I would throw a fifth name out there, though. I think Chris Collins is just really, really good given the amount of talent he has at Northwestern, and how he's able to get that team into the top half of the league year in, year out is pretty spectacular to me.
Yeah, I gotta concur on that one. Absolutely.
I do
Okay,
also
guys.
think, oh, sorry, one
Go
more
ahead,
thing too.
Jason.
I do also think like there a couple of guys that have just like been around, and I'm not sure that the fan bases are like in love with them, but if you just look at like a long-term track record, 5, 10 years, like Greg Gard and Fran McCaffrey have done pretty good things at
Yep.
their school,
Oh,
right? Like
absolutely. I
they've
think they're kind of like the poster child for Big Ten consistency. Absolutely. And doing it in very different ways, because like it's funny because like Fran McCaffrey and Iowa have this reputation of also being like, oh, they're just a Big Ten, slow Big Ten team, but they really play at one of the fastest paces in the country. So they're actually a pretty fun team to watch. They shouldn't really be lumped in with Wisconsin's kind of like methodical play, but as they often are. Okay, so we'll have a subsequent Big Ten podcast to talk about predictions and a whole bunch of other things, including our picks for all conference players, best players on each team, best newcomers, all that stuff. Until then, Nick, you got anything else?
That's all I got.
Jason?
No, we'll do the schedule next time. We're running pretty long, so we can save some meat for next time.
Yeah, we got plenty more to talk about. In fact, we could fill probably two more podcasts talking about stuff. So thank you everyone for listening, and we'll have another podcast up in not too long.